who owns the letter threw it away, umasa acher, and somebody else found it, ne'amar b'nusuch ha-takonos, and the way the takona has come down, the way the enactment of Rabbeinu Gershom has come down, shemutu l'koro. You have to read it. The language of the enactment was also not to your friend's mail unless he threw it away. So therefore the assumption is that if you are the FBI and you want to go through somebody's garbage can and read his mail, that's his tough luck. You're allowed to do so. Because at that point, once he threw it out, it no longer is considered to be subject to Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom. What's the second law on that? Can you do that?
I'm afraid that the Supreme Court has recently ruled that there is no privacy interest in garbage. So you should promise to a person's garbage and find a secret and you don't need a warrant to do it.
Just like Rabbeinu Gershom, okay?
See? This doesn't apply to Goyim. Goyim can read Jews' mail, according to Rabbeinu Gershom.
That's true. That's a good point, yeah. Goyim can read a Jews' mail, yeah.
That is
the
point. Unless they
legislated themselves, right. Yeah. That's the point that the Jews only make it for Jews.
I think
right.
They did.
Okay. Umikamakam, nevertheless, in must be there to if you find in the garbage an open letter, because of a letter it has on it the slogan, Upagin to Akmar, which means the poet gathers Kreno Nochash Rabin of Gershom or Agola, the somebody who breaks the who breaches the boundary set by Rabbi Gershom of the Mar Agola will be bitten by a snake. Yeshu Kassav, which is not a literal snake, it means the putting a person in the chayim is called like a snake bite. It's very nasty. Yeshu Kassav, somebody wrote, Asher Arfah Pish Eitzim Makabel, Yeshu Mar Shem HaKosh Yishlo, and this is what I'm saying there. Maybe the recipient of the letter threw it out, because he doesn't care. But Yeshu Chush, but one might suspect, maybe the sender doesn't want the letter to be raised by anybody. So the recipient has thus, relinquished his rights. By throwing it in the garbage, he's relinquished his rights to privacy. Anybody can come and read the letter. But maybe the sender didn't intend for the recipient to throw in the garbage. He intended for the recipient to burn it or destroy it some other way. So therefore, it may be prohibited to read it because the sender doesn't want it to be read. The coach came, and certainly this would be true. Why? When was that his property?
Hmm?
When was it ever his property?
Well, when he wrote the letter and until it got with the receiver.
Why do you assume that it was his property that whole time? Coach was sending it through the mailman.
The mailman was the shliach.
It's not his shliach.
No,
he's the shliach of the United States government. He's not my shliach.
When it gets to the hands, it becomes the receivers.
Yeah, okay. In other words, you're saying that it's, what you're saying is not so much who owns it. You're saying it's, what if I gave it to this guy, if I send this guy, I left it to his discretion to do what he wants with it. That's the assumption, which the Rabbeinu Gershom had, which is saying. So therefore, it's not a question of who owns it, but a question rather if I'm leaving it up to the recipient. So that makes sense to say the way you leave it to the recipient. And the other way, especially in the old days, when the only way of communicating with somebody who looked far distance was by letter, there was no way to communicate verbally. So therefore, it may well be that in fact, the contrary is true. That it's true that you don't care, but I still care, and I sent you a secret, and you're not allowed to divulge your secret. I don't want anybody else to read that secret either. The fact that you were careless and caused me this potential harm by throwing my letter in an unguarded garbage and then shred it, that's, caused me problems, but the person who finds it, perhaps is not allowed to read it. You can hear both ways, certainly.
Shouldn't you have to write something on it then?
Yeah, he wrote on it.
Okay, wrote on it.
He wrote on it. He wrote on it that it's specifically talking about such an instance. According to the story, between Monkey Guy's customer, and a person found a sealed envelope in the garbage, she also be got rolling out to touch it, the Chayav of Zir Balea, and he must give it back to its owner. I mean, that's not a lamash, we should have a couple of nation club owner means the recipient. Because we say, it's not likely that somebody threw away a letter, they didn't have junk mail in the old days, right? It's not likely that somebody threw away a letter without reading it. So therefore, they find a letter unopened, sealed, in the garbage, so you assume on itself, you assume that the guy didn't get the letter, right? The mailman didn't deliver it. And therefore, it's incumbent upon you to give the letter to the recipient. If at all possible, obviously, but you certainly can't read it, because the fact that it's sealed and found in the garbage indicates that it got there by mistake, not that it was intentionally thrown out. Okay? So far, so good?
Good.
Avram Makabel, somebody receives a letter from his friend, also a galos lacherim mashakosu bot. It's a fascinating idea. You can't, if you get a letter from somebody, you can't reveal from somebody to another person what it says in the letter. And like, is divulging his secrets. Even though he wrote in a letter, unless he writes in a letter, sure, it goes down the whole world. Hmm. He means to keep it a secret. And you're not allowed to divulge the contents of the letter to somebody else. A few able govern the gunet, even if there's nothing negative in the letter, nevertheless, to chola shomeh the mom and chaber, like anybody hears something from his friend, he's not allowed to say it over, close my shalom to show chaber as long as his friend is not permitted. So it's a fundamental idea, which is not just chayr rabbeinu gershom. It extends to any communication, and the chiddush rabbeinu gershom was to extend it to letters, which is that if somebody tells you something in confidence, not in confidence, he just tells you something, he didn't give you explicit permission to repeat it, so he really shouldn't be repeating it. Now, I'm not so sure how many of us are actually upstanding in this ethical test, but to theoretically speaking, that is the strict letter of the law. Somebody tells you something, you have to assume it's secret and not to be divulged unless that person gives you permission to divulge it. Okay? It's hard. Anyway, going on with this Hashuach Ksav Yachadero. This is one of my favorite halachos here. Hashuach Ksav Yachadero. Somebody sends a letter with his friend. Now that means Reuben is sending a letter to Shimon through Levi. So Levi is the agent. And Levi is the friend, because of the law of Tafiyat Rahman, it says on the letter, Chayv Rabbeinu Gershom, that Shaleach, but Levi is afraid, Choshesh, Shimuchel El Imam Makabel, if he brings it to the recipient, Nigoyim Lamezek, he might be damaged. He doesn't know what's in the letter, but he's afraid that the letter says something negative about him, right? I don't imagine it says in there, the bearer of this letter should be killed. But if it says something perhaps, you know, of a negative financial nature, whatever the case may be, he's afraid there's something negative in the letter. So Yesh Mishukasav, somebody wrote, Shekema Shu'osulukol, since it's forbidden to open up the letter, Ulubara Hatzavar, and to clarify it, Mishumchen Rabbeinu Gershom, it's not allowed to open it, right? Mutar Olav Gaminonim, it's better to destroy the letter. If you open the letter, you transgress Chen Rabbeinu Gershom. If you throw away the letter, you transgress perhaps some form of damage or theft. What's worse? To open the letter. So therefore, in this case, you should just throw the letter in the garbage and not deliver it, or just burn it up, as opposed to actually opening up and reading what you thought.
It's going
to
be paying bad things.
What?
Yeah, it's going to be separated.
It's kind of
what?
Kind of
what if there's like bad things plus a check for money? Like, you just go back, here's your money from that loan, and then he throws it out.
Bad things plus just vital information. Your mother passed away.
Oh, well, too bad. I mean, if you're not delivering a letter which you're afraid might actually have something negative about you, obviously it must have been the case where, you know, there's something,
there's a feud
or something, some reason, otherwise
you're not
a politician. Right?
But don't you have to judge...
No, but it's not the sense of Levy, it's being said to Shimon.
No,
Levy's the one who's carrying the letter.
Oh, wait, something that's bad about Levy?
Levy, yes.
Oh, okay.
About Levy being a messenger.
Oh.
That wasn't clear? There's something, the letter's not bad about the recipient, there's something bad about the messenger.
Mm.
So the letter messenger should throw it out, should open up, throw it out. No, because it's his own damage. He wants to prevent being damaged.
What if the damages are just?
What if as a constructive...
That's for me to decide, not for you to decide. But I have to go around with damages because somebody thinks they're just. Everybody thinks some damage is just. Not, yeah, obviously, a person could, the argument like that, but I'll tell you that all things being equal, a person knows that, you know, this might be a great
Like, what if...
could be abused?
What if Levi was going to like have a shidduch with one of their daughters and he's sending, with the daughter of Shimon, and Reuben's sending the letter saying, no, Levi's no good for your daughter, Shimon, and then he knows that it's going to be that, and so he throws it out, and then that...
Well, if you're a lady, wouldn't you want to throw that on those circumstances?
Yeah, but that's not right.
I mean, why should I allow my shidduch to be ruined by Reuben?
Because maybe you shouldn't be having that shidduch. Maybe yours.
Then let Reuben talk about it with me, not with him. So, on the contrary, that would be a primary example of a case where it would be in my best interest to discard the letter. I don't have to believe what Reuben says about me, do I?
Yes, not.
Right, so therefore I...
I have a question about not giving over what you read in the letter, even if it's good. Does that mean, like, when someone tells us a story, let's say someone wrote us a letter and told us a story about a rabbi, a situation where a rabbi was in, like, a situation and gave a halakha to a lawyer, like one of those stories that we hear all the time. I mean, does that follow the same thing? We can't give that over, even though it's Torah, because it's about a specific rabbi without his permission of telling it over?
I'm saying, somebody gave over a fact which was meant to be prophesied, it wasn't meant to be prophesied?
No, like, we don't know. Like, let's say there was a letter sent to some, like, I get a letter in the mail from someone else, and in it they said, oh, my rabbi went to the store and saw this and did this and did this, and you know, a nice little story about him. And so I assume that's secret information that I shouldn't be giving out.
A quick question. That's a very good question. In other words, it's something which is normally the type of thing which is, this is something I actually want to get to later on, but something which is normally assumed not to be information of a sensitive nature. So is that permitted to actually divulge because you assume that it's okay?
Right.
I have to speak about that later on. It's a good question. It has a lot of ramification on a lot of stuff which is published. So, getting back to this, so here he brings down at the end of this paragraph, he says, the issue is traffic for Dover. Something, there's another source which is unclear about the matter. Perhaps Basin, a court has given the sanction, the messenger opening the letter and looking what it says there. And it's interesting, this is, if you look at footnote 900, says this from the Shabbat Shul's Chikki Kelei, which is one of the Sephardi posting, and it's right, Shom, he writes this, Shema Sholeh Ugoi, is the guy who sent the letter as a non-Jew. Even though there's theoretically is the prohibition of Chen Rabbeinu Gershom on letters sent by a non-Jew, I am well, like we said before, you're allowed to open up, as long as the Koy doesn't find out that you open his letter, because that would desecrate God's name. So I know exactly why what the Chikki Kelei's logic is, since the encyclopedia doesn't bring it down here. Why, by a glance letter, if there is Chen Rabbeinu Gershom, it's more permissible to open the letter than by a Jew's letter. But that's what he says, saying that if by a Jew, should just go up and out. By a non-Jew, he should open up and see what it says, as long as he doesn't find out, in which case he'll be pretty upset at the Jew who opened up his letter. Okay, so he opens his friend's letters without permission. We can't make it pay, because at worst he's just causing damage. Not damaging him by opening the letter, he's causing damage by acquiring the knowledge which is in the letter. So that's only causing damage, and causing damage you don't usually have to pay for. You have to pay for damage which you directly did, but not damage which you caused indirectly. However, we come up, nevertheless, came to Shulabla and Mishpatim, since there are many people who breach the law. We stop the Seser and open in secret Sadam Shahim, other people's letters, Royal Abasin, and it's suitable for a court, Ligdor Gether, and to make a boundary, we are there and to afflict. Or to torture. Misha Yadza came, somebody opens his friend's mail. So in other words, you can't charge him money for it, but we can break him on the rack if necessary. So that whatever will cause people to refrain from opening other people's mail. Kanir Elay name as the court sees fit. Even if somebody does not know the Chenzer Rabbeinu Gershom involved in opening somebody else's mail, first of all, he still needs atonement because Chenzer Rabbeinu Gershom became an automatic prohibition, right? So therefore, he has to have some sort of atonement. As Allah over Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom there, he will be bukhram amnuta. What's the status if he automatically comes in talking to Chayim and has to be in nidui, meaning distance from the Jewish community? You have to look at the erech of Chayim, which we are not looking at right now. That's the question. Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom means automatic excommunication or just cause for excommunication. There's one other thing which Shor HaShulcha speaks about. There's a common perception that one is allowed to read postcards. Because postcards are not, by definition, sent sealed, right? They're sent open. Mm-hmm. So since they're sent open, so therefore, it would seem you're allowed to read it. So most commonly assume that you are allowed to, but Shor HaShulcha again said, like you said before, perhaps the sender doesn't mind, but the recipient does. Let's say the sender sent the recipient a postcard and said, you are a jerk and I hate your guts. Right? So then, of course, the sender doesn't care if somebody else reads the letter, but the recipient might be a little bit annoyed if other people read it. So therefore, that's the question whether in those circumstances, not just the sender can impose claims about Bene Gesserit, but also the recipient can impose claims about Bene Gesserit, because he doesn't necessarily want people to know what was in that letter or postcard which he received. Okay? Now, this makes life pretty difficult for people who want to do lots of things which would seem to be necessary in all sorts of situations. Now, if you turn the page, actually, we'll get into this here. You turn to page 3 of the handout. There are a bunch of tshuvos. I don't know why he's the one who speaks about it in great detail, but there was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, the last chief rabbi. I don't think Tel Aviv has a chief rabbi. No, I think they just got a new one. I forget who his name. I don't know who he is, but the last chief rabbi, there was a gap of several years which Tel Aviv didn't have a chief rabbi. And the last chief rabbi of Tel Aviv was from Chaim David HaLevi, the Tzadi, and he wrote a very popular book called Atel Chalav. Atel Chalav literally means make yourself a rabbi. And one of the reasons it's called that is because a lot of these tshuvos were given on a radio program which we had, which was called Atel Chalav, make yourself a rabbi. So in any event, he writes, for some reason, lots and lots of stuff about Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, and this Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom specifically, because of course there's a Sephardi, and the other one, not marrying two wives, doesn't apply to him. So he quotes a lot of the stuff which we just saw, and then he brings down here, on the bottom, you take a look on the bottom right side of the page. As it goes through more or less the stuff we saw already, he says, Vatani Gashman is the second last paragraph. Vatani Gashman, Bure Merkada She'elam Yikala. Let's get to the major question here. I'm Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom Nibche Bibnei Shikulim Chinuchiyim Kvedei Mishkal Chikon Zok. You are the head of an educational institution. Not a dormitory, let's say, an educational institution. You have a student who is receiving letters. You are afraid these letters are not in keeping with the spirit of the institution which you are running. For example, you are running a girls' institution and you are afraid that this girl is receiving letters from a boy, right? Which, of course, is not tolerated. So therefore, if that is the case, are you, the principal, allowed to open the letter and read the contents in order to safeguard your young charges and the educational character of the institution? You say no?
I say no. There's no risk of something being damaged.
Yes, there is.
Anything? What?
The girl.
What, for reading a letter?
Yeah.
There's nothing bad about her. You can't suspect that there's something bad about the principal in the letter, so you can't...
No, not about the principal, but if something that if a girl has a relationship with a boy, then
through
they
a letter?
Bad. Yeah, through a letter. They used to do that in the old days.
Yeah, so who cares?
It's through a letter. It's words.
What do you think we'll get into a letter?
What's supposed to follow him? She's still never
going
the guy.
The assumption is that not just remain penthouse for the rest of their lives.
Right. So these girls have to be not married ever? I don't see what the problem is.
Oh, it's okay. We're talking about a high school or elementary school, right? It's not yet time for her to get married. Okay, and I'm just giving this as an example. It could be as a guy getting a letter from a crack dealer, right?
Well, that's different because then there's real damage involved.
And so the so in any event, so this is the question which he had to deal with, and he deals back to the question several truths. So he says, if you take a look at the bottom there, it says, Bekeshu takana zot, concerning this takana, Romosan Shumasama to the Vokim, concerning this enactment, we don't find discussion in the Vokim about what happens if you're afraid that such a letter has, you know, counteracts your educational values. It seems that the question never came up. So, but concerning this, at least nobody ever wrote about the question, I guess. But it says an interesting thing. He's Ola Sheila Main Zu, the very cute chat he has here. He says a similar question arose with Gabi Takanach, vis-a-vis one of the other Takanach from Rabbeinu Gershom, which is Via Takanach. That's the takana shalola says isha lisha not to marry a second wife. Hanisua ha'yuchasi, the way the question is posed in halacha is imchein Rabbeinu Gershom nohei gam b'makom mitzvah or lav. The Rabbeinu Gershom applies also in a mitzvah or not. What's a mitzvah? That marashul is going to give an example. That maran has b'shulchanar, the thing of the mechaber, the teretz in the shulchanar, he should be mitzvah shel yibum, where it's in Rabbeinu Gershom. We have a halacha in Judaism. If a man was married and he died without any children, then his wife is supposed to undergo even yibum or chalitza. Yibum means she's either supposed to live with the brother, or she's supposed to undergo a ceremony called chalitza in which that relationship is severed. So, yibum is a mitzvah. If a man dies childless, then it's a mitzvah for his brother to marry his wife,
his former sister-in-law.
So if that's the case, what happens when now we have Chen Rabbeinu Gershom? Does Chen Rabbeinu Gershom prevent the mitzvah of Yibum from taking effect because that would be his second wife? Or do we say, no, Rabbeinu Gershom did not mean for his takana not to take his second wife to be enforced in a place where it's going to contradict a mitzvah? Okay? Now, the truth is, look, I don't really understand the question, but you can make the argument that any marriage is a mitzvah, right? Because anytime you marry somebody, you fulfill the marriage mitzvah instead of getting married.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that there are different qualities of mitzvahs. You know, there are different levels of mitzvahs. So that mitzvah of marrying, obviously, was not done by the Torah to be carte blanche to go marry as many women as you want. Because the only time you're going to marry a woman, you say, another mitzvah! Get more of them out there, right?
It's like wearing multiple pairs of tzitzit. Multiple
figures. So that's the case. It's hard to say that kind of mitzvah is the one which the Torah would encourage doing in multiple times. But the idea of Yibum is not a question of not a multiple, so much as a multiple time mitzvah. It's actually a rare opportunity. And maybe this is something which is very important because we understand, according to Kabbalistic ideas, that it has a lot to do with giving peace to the neshama, which dies without any children. So there's a whole bunch of stuff going on here. So maybe this should be permitted. So the Beis Yosef says that is in fact the case. The Beis Yosef Kara. Shemikresh of Yibum lo yikrim abeinu gershom. In the case of Yibum, he never made his son get chayim. And obviously his meaning is Shayibu mitzvah, since Yibu is a mitzvah, Lachem utayro yabeng, therefore he can do Yibu even though he's already married. So Sifar Ramah, and Ramah, Rabbi Isserlitz, who wrote the glosses on the Shulchan Aruch, which contains the Ashkenazic halacha, as opposed to the Sephardic halacha, which the Shulchan Aruch itself has. Vuadi Mechol Mokum Bichlu Mitzvah. It's true that anybody's going to push off a mitzvah. Keep up. Such as, in Shoshoi Ishto Esher Shoshoi. If a man lives with his wife for 10 years, and she hasn't given birth, she's barren, that he's allowed to marry a second wife. Mekar Barmi Dov Mishav Shetir Nazmon. The source of this is in the words of the great medieval authorities, which he himself recites, which are Mordechai Barashva Maram Padva, Umi Eni Mukshal Barashva, and it's similar to that which the Rashba writes as a reason, has that like this. The logic dictates, Shalom Gazai, the Rabbi Gershom, that might not make this decree, B'chol HaNoshim, with all women, U'b'chol HaMagashim, and all people who might divorce their men, their wives, Shalom Gazai, Ella, the only reason why he did this properly, Rizor, in order to make a decree, B'chneya Pritim, for those people who are,
what's the word for parts in English? Who are,
it's not quite the same thing. There's people who are, coarse. So I'm owning a shosem, and they torture their wives, shalom kaloy. In other words, they threaten their wives, they're going to take a second wife. They do take a second wife in order to make their wives miserable. I have a law of dashes, he's bashay, stop and so. But we don't assume that Rabbeinu Gershom wants for his decree to take effect. But also, shalom kachomet, shiyotim shalom b'ksuba. This is a little bit different. He actually didn't, he segued into this without letting us know. There's a third Takana Rabbeinu Gershom, we've mentioned very soon. Another Takana Rabbeinu Gershom made is that he now has to divorce your wife against her will. Before Rabbeinu Gershom came along, because her husband didn't like his wife, he wanted to divorce her, he just presented with a bill of divorce, and that's that. We didn't need the acquiescence of the wife to the divorce. Okay? Don't ask me if this is fair or not fair. I can't answer you. I don't know. But that's the way it was. But there's a time Rabbeinu Gershom made a decree that you can't divorce your wife against her will. She has to agree to receive the divorce. Okay? So the question is, what about a case where it's a mitzvah to divorce your wife? For example, you are a Kohen and you're married to a divorcee, right? Which is a no-no. Right? The Kohen's not supposed to be married to a divorcee. Or you swell and you're married to a mamzeret, a woman who's illegitimate, who's forbidden to marry even a regular Jew. So if that's the case, would Rabbeinu Gershom say it's also forbidden to divorce your wife against the will in these situations?
No.
So Rashba says no. In these situations, since the submission to divorce your wife, so therefore Rabbeinu Gershom would never have meant that she prohibited to divorce your wife without her permission under these circumstances, and therefore it certainly is the case that you can divorce her, give her the bill of divorce, without her agreeing to receive it. The same thing with they're extrapolating from this Rashba to the case where Rabbeinu Gershom Sakharan not to marry a second wife. That's only the case where there is no mitzvah to marry the second wife. But there is where there's a mitzvah imperative to marry the second wife, then you actually don't have the claim of Rabbeinu Gershom effect. And also the same thing over here, right? If we have the idea that also that as he said, well, to say, well, I'll let him say it himself. We'll see it inside. In a case where the halacha is that you have to either divorce a woman or marry another one, the great righteous person, but the Nadeshav did not make such a decree. Okay, that's only one man. But on the other hand, if you're a Moshram Dasachokim, Ramah means those who argue, the slave in the Chere Rabbeinu Gershom no way got through the Mokom Mitzvah. And the Chere Rabbeinu Gershom's wife, even when there's a Mitzvah. The Chere Rabbeinu Gershom not to marry a second wife. But through Mokom Yibum, even the Mitzvah is Yibum. And he brings down to some Shom Tiyen, he recites Bali Sporadot, when people have this logic, how goes Mordechai, he Mukha Yeses, other Rishom, Dr. Moshe Yashram. But going through Arukim Yeser, and this is a very long issue. Ronald House today, we cannot quote a few edits, but they're even a little bit from the edges. Mine, the Tigran Marokos, if you look inside, you'll see that all sorts of books, which I'm going to speak about, and I'm going to skip to the next paragraph, because now it just gives a series of places to look. But let us mention one specific important detail. Vukiyama Kola Dasa Chokim, that source. As a source in the shot. I don't remember offhand what it speaks about there, but he doesn't bring it down. So, El Shalom HaPashut. So he wants to bring down, since he's a Sephardi, who's he going to pass in life?
Rama.
No, like the Shulchan Aruch, as opposed to the Ramah, right? So the Shulchan Aruch, he says, since the Beis Yosef holds that there is no Dafanis Rabbeinu Gershom by a mitzvah. And he says also the Ramah brings down that well that position first. And only afterwards does he bring down to a position which argues. So it seems that he agrees with this. So therefore he wants to say that it would be permissible here to open the girl's letters. Especially because it may well be that the Chen Rabbeinu Gershom does apply to a place where it's a mitzvah. But in other words, where it would be a mitzvah to marry his second wife because of Yibum in order to fulfill that mitzvah. But he says it for sure doesn't apply in a case where there's an Aveira. Meaning if you keep the Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom here and you allow these letters to reach their destination unintercepted, so then it's a big problem, right? Because then those people would be transgressing a sin, whatever sin they're transgressing. So therefore, perhaps even though it's told that in place where it's a positive commandment, the Chen Rabbeinu Gershom still applies, and you're not allowed to transgress in order to fulfill a positive commandment. So it would seem that in order to prevent somebody from doing a negative commandment, it should still be permissible. Right?
I guess it's backing up to a higher level of abstraction, but I'm not sure. Rabbi Gershom seems to, with all the new rules that he established, by making the new rules, implying that the Torah itself was less than optimally moral before he made the rules. And my understanding that Orthodoxy generally accepts that the Torah was perfectly moral because it came from God, and therefore any such amendments, even if wouldn't be accepted. I just don't quite understand the process.
No, he ever says that's right.
He could be more ethical as a letter of the law.
The Torah was written for the lowest common denominator. It was written for people who don't necessarily aspire to be great tzaddikim, very pious people, or even very ethical people. It was written at a minimum level for people to function as a, you know, functioning society with some degree of sanctity, no matter what the circumstances were. But it was not meant to be the last word on ethics. That wasn't meant to be the case at all. So therefore, it's quite possible, first of all, that the rabbis would decree higher levels of ethics, for whatever reason. They saw that it was proper to decree them at a certain point. Maybe at some time it's sufficient, they were voluntary. Later on, they had become mandatory. Maybe, in fact, as they saw that the time was right, because of whatever values were now common in society, to change the level of public ethics which were employed. Maybe because of financial reasons, it became necessary to change for monetary reasons. Might became necessary to change the level of public ethics, and so on and so forth. But no, the Torah is never meant to be the last word in ethics. Certainly not the written Torah, and not even the Gemara. You have, therefore, many ethical treatises which, you know, come way past the Gemara and discuss higher levels of functioning than the Gemara itself.
Like Samuel
Goyer's life. Well, Samuel Goyer's life is a very difficult episode. You mean on Shabbat specifically, right?
Yeah, it's an ethical thing to do, but, or not just in general, just halakhically you're not required if it's there to get okay to serve no time laws, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just an ethical thing to do that, and it protects the Jewish nation from oppression, but really, like, halakhically you wouldn't have to, but it's just, you know, a very ethical thing to do, and we all assume that we would do it. On Shabbos is probably a bigger question, but...
Yeah, and it's not so simple that it's more ethical to serve, it's ethical to save a non-Jew's life. If it wasn't for the fact that, you know, scratch my back and I'll scratch your back and you'll scratch mine, if it wasn't for that, it's not necessarily ethical to save a non-Jew who doesn't keep a Shemitah free. No.
That's right. I have a question about Rabbi Yerushan, with the opinion, all right?
Listen, can I give you an answer?
Yes.
No, but basically what you were told is not necessarily true.
Right.
Yeah, it's not. Or the law of Judaism is a baseline. The law given by the Torah and the Mishnah as a baseline.
Would anyone go so far as to say that there are things in the Torah that are permissible, that are in fact unethical? But, you know, I was just...
Yeah, sure. The Ramban himself says it. Famous Ramban, beginning of Parshas Kedoshim. Mm-hmm. Ramban says, according to the Torah itself, I don't know if it's the article finished yet.
You want the article?
I want to say it in English. Very important Ramban. If you haven't seen this Ramban, it's very important to see it. The most important Ramban in the entire Torah. If you only see one Ramban, this is the one to see. So the Ramban says,
I'm unpacking my
pen. Okay. Beginning of Parshas Kedoshim. It's Ramban Vayikra, chapter 19, verse 2. Okay? It's not the first Ramban in the Pasuk, it is the last Ramban in the Pasuk. Ramban says, Kedoshim to you. Says you should be holy. Tzarech l'das, one has to know, ma'am mechumash ha-mitzvah zu. Oh no, sorry, we need to use the Orach Chaim. Long commentary. Whoops. Okay, in the Ramban, it is the same verse, it's the second Ramban in the Pasuk. He says, it brings down Rashi, we'll skip Rashi for now. But he says like this, he says, well, inyam, the matter of Kedusha is, ki atola, the Torah forbade, he's zero about rayas, it forbidden relationships, and certain forbidden foods. The kira, but it allowed hafiya to have relations each with each other, man and wife. Hafiya to have both their yain and to eat meat and drink wine. In case that's the case, yinsa bala taiva, person who has a very lusty person, will find room based on Torah law. We will shuttle the dimas or ishto to be awashed in desire with his one wife, or nashaka rebels, or many more wives. And pursue just, you know, that type of fulfillment all the time. But the oath is so very yawning, and it can become an alcoholic, a big drinker. The zole basalama, and a big fresher of meat. The fabric is son of a clone of oaths, and it'll speak all sorts of foul language. So the loose cohesive of a third, this was the prohibitions of these things, were not actually a third. And then it will become the most famous terms in the Rambam, it's not the most famous, Novel the Ashut HaTorah. Novel is a hard word to translate. It means a coarse, base, low person with the Torah's permission. So it's possibly a coarse, base, and low person with the permission of the Torah. So therefore the Rambam goes on to say that we have a mitzvah of Kedoshim to you, which is a mitzvah to not follow the strict letter of the law, but rather to aspire to something higher. Even still, you know, what does it mean?
That's why I'm rhetoric.
Yeah, but, yeah, but that's true. Right. No, sure, it's question, but that's...
specific.
It's not specific, and also it differs for each person and
right.
each time. So it's a relative law.
I mean, just the other day, I was skimming through...
Well, that's it. Does that address your question?
Part of it.
Okay.
That's something that was not explicitly given. At one point in Leviticus or Numbers, I forget, you know, one part of the army of Israelites is ordered to go out and kill every man, woman, and child, but they're allowed to let the female children live so that they may have them for themselves. And it struck me as aside from the genocide otherwise, how can you have a child for yourself? And that struck me as particularly...
I believe it says that for slaves, not for wives.
I don't know the...
Yeah, I believe it says for slaves.
Slaves, not wives.
Slaves, yeah.
Very, very different.
That's not a question. That's not a question. The first question was a good one, this question is not a good one. Why? Because...
About
the genocide aspect. No, it's not about the genocide aspect. That's not a good question. Because we don't understand, in order to assume that it's a valid question, you have to assume that you know the historically speaking, what the character of this nation was, and therefore you can indict, it's not a strong word, but you know what I'm saying. You can indict the Torah for not being ethical, because from your perspective, this is not an ethical thing to do. But you, in fact, 3,000 or 4,000 years later, have no clue what this nation was like at the time, and it may well be that it was entirely justified for whatever reason to annihilate that entire nation.
And keep the little girls as slaves.
Well, okay, the ones who are not, you know, who didn't have the, what you call it, the ones that are affected by non-Jews, by more guilty and by non-Jews, the law is that the nationality follows the male, not the female. So therefore, the males are eradicated, not the females. And that's a very important point, because if God dictated those wars at that time, so we assume that God knew what he was doing at the time in those wars.
It couldn't be applied to the modern day situation if it was a Palestinian.
No, it couldn't, because there's no command to kill Palestinians.
Right.
I think some people would apply. Right? Some people would apply, but not because of the nation, per se, in other words, not because there's some command to annihilate the nation, but rather some people say, well, you know, every Arab is a potential enemy, so therefore we have to get rid of them. Okay, but that's not the same thing as God coming down saying annihilate a nation. He hasn't said that for several thousand years. So therefore, the question of morality or ethics you can only ask, from my perspective, on something which is a mitzvah for all time and all generations and all places. And then you can ask, could there be higher ethical standards than mitzvah X, which is a permanent mitzvah? But I don't think you can ask it on mitzvah Y, which was a one-time command expressly given by God in a specific situation. Because in that situation, we cannot know all the variables and all the factors which led God to make that decision.
I mean, there are nevertheless some people in the Kahani side who apply these, or say these rules still apply.
I can't take responsibility for aberrations. Yes. Kahana is an aberration of Judaism. So there's nothing I can do about that. What? There's no Sonic. Far from it. Right, that's a Kiddush Hashem. You can make the argument, but the Tzaddik he wasn't.
We were just thinking about the Sephardic interpretation where Rabbeinu Kiddushim's decrees are all good, and that's, you know, for Yibum, you know, you can do it to have a second wife for that purpose. I agree with that a lot more than the other opinion, because with the other opinion...
What was the other thing?
That you still have to follow Rabbeinu Kiddushim's God. So, but that, to me, that sort of violates the do not subtract and do not add to the Torah, because if you make a takana that forbids you from fulfilling the mitzvah in the Torah, then you're changing the Torah, in essence, because then no one will be able to fulfill such a mitzvah. I mean, we can just...
That's true. You're right.
Like a Kohen who has his wife, who's, God forbid, raped by a non-Jew, he has to divorce her, and if she doesn't want to, you have to force it on her in order to perform, otherwise you're sinning, and otherwise it's something you need to do, so how can we be changing the Torah like that?
That's true. You're right. One of the principles we have in Takanas Rabbanan, in any rabbinic enactment, is that it cannot directly contradict a Torah-based mitzvah.
And that's a Navi, and it's temporary.
What? Yeah, can't directly contradict. In other words, you can't just cross out and come and say, this mitzvah, which is Torah commandment is null and void. But, as long as that is directly contradicted, if they make a decree which is substantially dealing with some other issue, and just by, you know, some extension, cancels and negates the possibility of fulfilling the Torah mitzvah, so then in that case, it's possible that it does work. For example, let's say the takana not to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, right, when it comes to Shabbos. Well, that's such a good example. Oh, let's use it anyway. Okay, so the takana not to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos is not a contradiction to the Torah's mitzvah to blow, because you can blow on the other days, or, on the Torah level is only one day, right, or the other years, right? But in fact, on the years when Rosh Hashanah does come out on Shabbos, since it's a peripheral or tangential result of Kona, it kicks in. All right, this year you won't hear a shofar. Again, in the days when Rosh Hashanah only on one day. Okay, doesn't matter. All right, contradicts explicit mitzvah in the Torah, but since the decree, it overall did not contradict and didn't come to contradict the mitzvah in the Torah, so therefore, you might say that a fringe issue is not a problem. Besides that, I too don't like that.
Okay. I'm too right-wing for that. I don't like that.
Okay. Besides that, another possible, I'll throw you out another one, okay? In this case of Yibum, there's an alternate mitzvah.
Right.
The alternate mitzvah is Chalitza.
That's fine.
Right.
Okay. Specifically like the Kohen example.
Oh, the Kohen example, right. In that case, you probably would have, I'd agree with you. In that case, there's no out. You can't say Shein Rabbi and Yoshua.
I mean, because we can still do Chalitza. I mean, technically, theoretically, the guy could, force it to think of the Takana. He can do another mitzvah instead.
Right.
But like in these other cases that he brings up, I don't see how you could follow the Gershom's levels over the Torah.
Right, so we had
to so far. We didn't have 2 days. I would also disagree with not the one so far on Shabbos.
I agree. I think the only argument was, in fact, about this case about 9-2-1, not about cases of divorce. In that case, you would have to be right. Okay, we'll go on tomorrow. Talk about diaries, emails.